Hello and welcome to episode 25 of series 5 of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Welcome again to the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you're a new listener, you will find over 100 episodes available at our website, which is thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. If you go to the website and you click on the podcast tab, you will see all of the podcast episodes going back all the way to 2020, which you can listen to, consume there. And that's where you'll get the best listening experience, regardless of which platform you're listening on now. On the website, we have links on our show notes. We have a full show note for each episode. And we also have links to our guests and any media that they reference in their interviews itself. Also on the website, you'll find links to our products and our services, our visual communication tools, our explainer videos, and our other internal communications products. So that's the best place to visit if you are new to the show or if you want to get the full podcast experience. Anyway, let's move into the topic for this episode's interview. Amazingly, we've not covered the topic of writing. Given that we're an internal communications and employee engagement podcast, writing is one of those skills that many of our listeners probably have honed over the years. And my experience of working with internal communicators, a lot of them have come from marketing backgrounds, communications backgrounds, media backgrounds. So we take it as read that we're all great at writing. But why is it that we should still be prioritizing and emphasizing our writing ability in a world that is dominated with social media, where we've got AI taking over a lot of the things that we used to do and writing copy for us or generating initial copy anyway? How does our writing skills come into that? And also, how does our use of social media and the use of social media and short form communications impact on the skill and the art of writing? So we're going to be exploring with an expert who specializes in helping individuals and organizations improve their writing ability. We're going to be exploring this topic in more detail. We're going to be finding out why it's still important, what are the most common challenges that people find when it comes to writing, and is writing just about grammar and punctuation, or is it more around our impact that we have through our communications? And as I said, we're going to be looking at the impact of AI on our writing and how AI is in fact shifting us from generative writing more to being skilled editors of the machine written stuff that we are more continuously using or using for inspiration in our copy. So lots of things to cover, really interesting conversation, and I think it's something that is long overdue on the podcast, and I'm pleased that we finally covered. My guest to today's interview is Grace Aldridge Foster. Grace works to demystify the writing process for her clients. Many professionals she's worked with believe that they are bad at writing and don't enjoy doing it. Contrary to the popular belief, though, writing isn't an art that a few people are born with the ability to do. It's a science, and everyone can learn to do it better. What's more, we all have to do it, so why shouldn't we learn to do it better? And this principle is what drives the approach at Bold Type, which is the training and consulting firm that Grace founded with her partner, Casey Mank, in 2018. So hello, Grace. How are you?
Hi, Craig. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. It's great to be speaking with you. For our listeners, could you give us a geographical check-in, please? Whereabouts are you in the world, please?
Yes, indeed. I am in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Wow, excellent. Right. So for our European listeners, geographically, where position that for us on a kind of like a crude, rudimentary northeast, southwest of northern United States?
It's at the northern part of the southeast. It's south of Washington, D.C. It's north of Georgia, where I grew up. So it's kind of right smack dab in the middle of the East Coast.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you. So anyway, I gave a brief introduction there. And I know a lot of our listeners, particularly those who work in internal communications, will have probably come from a writing background or maybe even a media background. But you want to tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into what you're doing now?
Sure. I got into this line of work by starting in college writing centers. I don't know if you have those in Europe, but
yeah.
Yeah, I was as an undergraduate in college, I was a writing center tutor. In graduate school, I did the same thing. I worked in writing centers. And so I was doing one-on-one, kind of writing coaching sessions with other students, with professors, that kind of thing. And then from there, I was in Washington, D.C. in graduate school and sort of started dipping my toe into the world of corporate communications as well. And it's really the same kind of work, just in a professional setting.
Yeah. And were your university studies, were you a literary person, were you a writing person? What was your kind of academic background?
Yes. English literature. That's right. I was an English major in college and then went to graduate school for it as well.
Yeah, fantastic. So again, without betraying any kind of corporate confidentiality, tell us a little bit about the types of organizations you work with. I know you mentioned in the beginning around people who maybe don't think they can write so well and maybe kind of self-deprecating when it comes to that type of thing. Well, tell us a little bit about some of your kind of typical clients that you're working with at the moment, please, Grace.
Sure. You know, we have worked with such a wide variety of organizations. We say we're industry agnostic because, just about every industry you can think of, people have come to us saying, please help us. You know, our people need help with writing. So it's an interesting mix of, teams of folks who are not traditionally experienced writers, like engineers, for example, scientists. Right. And then also, we work with a lot of professional communicators, PR, teams, marketing teams, internal communicators, people who already are quite skilled writers, but they're looking for, some fresh tools and tactics to kind of just get a new approach to the things that they're already doing, or they're looking for sort of like a shared standard for best practices. They want to get everyone on the same page. People have a lot of different backgrounds or something, who've all kind of come together on this one team. So it's truly our clients are kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. Huge Fortune 500 companies, little bitty, PR companies and hyperlocal nonprofits and everything in between.
Fascinating. And do you tend to operate, is it more kind of training or is it coaching or a bit of mentoring? Is it a mixture of all of the above? How do you normally deliver your expertise?
Yeah, it's a combo, but the most of what we do is team training. We work with teams usually of 15 or fewer. So that just means if we have let's say we're working with a corporate communications team that has 120 members, we'll train all of them. We'll just do it in small cohorts. And that's because we try to keep our training. A lot of it is still delivered via Zoom, by the way. Yeah. And so we try really hard to keep those training experiences super interactive. And it's hard to do that with a big group. So small groups, typically small teams, but we do one-on-one coaching as well. And that's, I think people tend to think that that's like a, if you've got someone who's really bad on your team, let's put them through coaching. But more often it's someone who needs, some support as they're working on a really significant project or something like that. And we're there to kind of be a partner with them through that.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's dive in then. So I guess we kind of, we framed it at the beginning that, we all have to write at some point, whether it's an email or whether it's a kind of dissertation or a kind of really big, long kind of speech or whatever. Why is it important that we kind of work on and improve our writing skills? Why can't we just kind of muddle on with our clumsy personal style of writing? Why do we need to improve? Why do we need to get better?
Well, first of all, you need to improve and get better because most people won't. And so it's a way to make yourself stand out. Most people are satisfied with really bad communication because they haven't, seen it differently. They don't know that they can do better or expect more. So I think that it's a differentiator, right? If you can communicate well, if you can write well, present well, it gives you a real edge at work.
Carry on. I cut across you. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, that's a big reason. Do it because other people aren't doing it, right? It'll make you stand out. But also it's that people underestimate the impact their writing has or can have on other people, and specifically on their professional reputation. Your writing often goes before you, right? It's like the first impression that someone has of you professionally might be an email that you send, or it might be your bio, you know, on a company website or something like that. And first impressions linger. So I think that it's not just the content of your messages, right, that you're communicating when you write. It's how you share that message. It's your tone. You know, it's do people want to work with you or don't they? What can they assume about you, right or wrong, based on the way you've written something? Do you seem professional? Do you seem detail-oriented? Do you seem like you care about the topic that you're communicating about? People are you know, drawing an impression of you from your writing, whether you consider yourself to be a, you know, capital W writer or not.
No, most definitely. I think I totally resonates with me, the first impressions. And again, you know, it's not about being, you know, selective or sniffy or prejudiced, but it, you know, sometimes when you read stuff that clearly should have had a little bit more kind of thought and time put into it, and it's been thrown together, and it's not, you know, sentences are too long and poor grammar. It again, it's not about kind of an elitist thing. It can just show a lack of attention or, you know, a lack of self-awareness as well, to a large extent, I think.
That's right. And it's not even just your sentences, right? Like, is this polished, or, you know, what kind of adjectives did you use? It's before people have read anything, they draw certain impressions about you from your writing. For example, if you send an email that is five paragraphs long, and you know they're big chunks of text, and they're not broken up, and there's no white space, and there's no, you know, headings or bullet points or whatever, before your audience has read a single word, they're already drawing assumptions about you. You know, you're long-winded. Maybe you're disorganized. Maybe you're self-important, right? There are all these kind of negative people don't want to have to put a lot of effort into reading what you've written. And so if they assess immediately that it will be effortful that for them to read what you've written, then they're automatically going into it with a really negative
impression. Yeah. It reminds me of the Winston Churchill comment, which I'm sure you're aware of, which is I didn't have the time to write you a short email, so I wrote you a long one instead. Exactly. And it's often the case, isn't it? It sort of smacks of almost not disrespectfulness, but you know, kind of, I'm just going to throw down all my mental thoughts in one big, long, rambling paragraph, and I'll let you try and work out what the hell I'm trying to say, so.
That's right. It immediately tells your audience that you value your own time much more than you value theirs.
So we're kind of leaning into the kind of emails there, and you mentioned, you know, lots of different applications. So I mean, obviously, it's probably a very broad range of things that your clients are writing. I mean, is it more around emails, or are there other things that you're noticing is a kind of common use for this writing art and skill, but also and what are some of the kind of common challenges that you're kind of picking up through the kind of sessions that you run with your clients?
Yeah, well, certainly email is a really common focal point. Sometimes when people ask me what I do for a living, I just say I teach people how to write emails, because it feels like it comes up all the time, even if we're teaching a course that is not explicitly about email. So that is certainly a lot of it, but it's also, you know, presentation decks and press releases and corporate social responsibility reports. And we work also with some government agencies. And so it's web copy and forms, you know, it's all kinds of stuff like that. And in terms of the problems that folks come with, I mean, one issue is that so we hear this complaint. It's a little hard to articulate, but we hear this complaint over and over from leadership, from managers and even higher leadership, the people who come to us saying, please, you know, I need training for my team. We hear this complaint over and over that people don't seem to have strong judgment around writing.
Mm.
And we've really tried to kind of peel back what that means over time. What is it that people are expressing frustration with when they use that word? Because it comes up again over and over. You know, my team just doesn't have good judgment when it comes to writing.
Mm.
And what we've figured out is that one of the things they're talking about is audience awareness, that people don't tend to modulate their tone or the length or even the details that they include based on their audience. They seem to be lacking judgment when it comes to what a particular audience needs or is looking for. Mm. And what's interesting is when I hear the word judgment now, part of what is built into that is empathy.
Mm.
It's that people aren't taking the time to empathize with their audience. And so a lot of what we teach is how do you build strategic empathy with your audience? What are some tactics you can use to try to understand what does my audience care about? What do they need? What are they looking to do with this document that I'm sending them or creating for them or asking them to read? What are their goals? And also just things like, how busy are they? You know, are they reading? Some of it's practical. Are they reading on a computer or perhaps a mobile device? What time of day are you, you know, sending this email or that kind of thing? So that judgment piece, that empathy piece, I mean, this is what comes up over and over and over. So we don't do as much work around, you know, we're not teaching people grammar. For example,
no.
We're not, you know, revisiting grade school, you know, English class and teaching people the basics of grammar. Instead, we're teaching people frameworks for how to produce writing that is impactful, that respects people's time and attention, and that leads to actual outcomes.
Okay, that's really good. I mean, I think that you know, for me, that encapsulates a lot of the challenges with communication, in particularly corporate communication in general, which is that you know, whether it's written or any other form, it's like kind of looking at it through the eyes of the recipient and what do we, you know, you'll be familiar with the kind of what do we want them to think, feel and do differently after they've interacted with whatever it is we've shared with them. You know, obviously in your context, written, if it's a video or if it's a kind of, you know, kind of another form of communication, it's very much, you know, what is the behavior change I'm looking to enact within this communication, I think. And then that empathy, I think, is a really, really important piece, because when you were talking there before you mentioned empathy, I'm thinking this is like, you know, kind of emotional intelligence in written form, isn't it? Yeah. And you kind of, you answered one of the questions I was going to ask, which is, you know, and I'm pleased you said it's not about, you know, grammar and punctuation are probably the basics that, you know, you've kind of got to have that right, but actually it's the kind of structure and the narrative and that ability, you know, to kind of tell a story. I remember we did an interview, I can't remember which series it was now, where we had someone who was talking about some of their communications, and what they would talked about is we do a kind of a skim, swim, deep dive. So you've got the skim, which is the kind of headlines, the swim, which is a kind of a paragraph which summarizes it, and then the deep dive, which is like the whole kind of, you know, the whole shebang sort of thing. And you, depending on how much time you've got, you can kind of dip into it and kind of at least get an idea of what it's about, and then work out whether that's something you want to kind of go into in a bit more depth. And I really like that kind of respect for people's time and availability. Just I guess one of the things I want to talk to you about was around a lot of stuff now. You know, social media is obviously, you know, stating the obvious that it's like huge, and obviously short form with X and other forms of communicating, and obviously a lot of even like with TikTok and Instagram, even more visual and less literary content. What how do you see the different landscape of now? Because, you know, we've talked a lot about email, and it's still probably the workhorse for many people anyway, but there's obviously lots of different alternatives now. How is that changing, and also maybe changing the type of work that you're doing with your clients and how you're kind of communicating, how they're communicating, and how therefore that feeds into their writing skills?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say in a way it affects our work less than you would think it it would. And I'll say why, which is that the norms around social media are changing constantly. The trends, the best practices, you know, you think about Instagram captions, for example, you know, this won't be the right, you know, length of time, but let's say every year, you know, there are these huge sort of shifts in the way these platforms, the way content is shared on these platforms. And so what we try to stress to clients is what you need is a framework. You need a strategy that is flexible enough that it will help you and it will serve you well, even as social media platforms and usage and all these things change, because it will, right?
Yeah. Like
what you're using today is not what you'll necessarily be using next year or what you were using 3 years ago. And so we would rather teach people skills that endure, that are relevant no matter what, rather than teaching people, you know, specifically what in August 2024 makes a great Instagram caption.
Yeah.
So that is something that, you know, we think about a lot. We certainly have clients who are writing for social media, and it comes up, you know, in our workshops. But when we focus on social media, for example, again, it's not about, you know, what today makes a perfect social media example or caption. It's what are the skills that you need to be able to assess what will make an effective social media caption at any point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in general, of course, the way social media has affected our work and writing, even in a corporate setting, is that, you know, since we all have a cell phone in our pockets, you know, our attention spans have shrunk drastically.
Yeah.
So what really has changed is that people's reading patterns have changed. Their attention their capacity to pay attention has changed. And of course, all of those things do affect the way we teach writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, because again, you know, let's just thinking about that is the, you know, obviously a lot of, I don't know whether it's more of a kind of just a more of a social thing than a corporate thing, but the whole kind of, you know, use of abbreviations and acronyms and things like that, just because, again, because of that brevity. I mean, again, I know it sounds sort of superficial. It's not about, you know, lol or things like that. But is that had an impact on, you know, because I know with my kids who are grown up adults now, but, you know, that kind of shorthand flows into the way they communicate, you know, verbally and also in writing that isn't just on text. Is that sort of started to leak into the corporate communications sort of work that you're doing, or you're seeing that, or is that kind of more of a kind of a social thing?
No, I think it has. I mean, one of the ways in which we see that come up in a corporate setting is especially with new employees, with young, you know, entry-level, you know, employees. And again, it kind of goes back to that judgment piece that often, you know, let's say their work emails look a lot like their text messages or social media communication. So that is a sort of basic, I think, workplace skill that is really important, is just knowing when it's appropriate to communicate that way and when it's not. And, you know, the thing is those shorthand, I think that especially like Gen Z is extremely innovative in the way they communicate. I mean, the things that my 21-year-old sister can communicate via emojis is it's incredible, right? Like it's actually, just because it's shorthand doesn't mean that it's not deeply expressive and nuanced.
Yeah.
However, it's only deeply expressive and nuanced if your audience has the same frame of reference as you. You know, if I think some of the issues around this in a corporate setting are generational.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say that it's like younger folks are communicating poorly. It's almost like a different language.
Yeah, Yeah. I was going to say, because we did an episode a few episodes ago, if anyone's listening wants to go back through our back catalog and find that, about Gen Z. And yeah, I think it, you know, we're kind of looking, I'm looking at that from a kind of Gen X perspective. You know, it needs to be corporal and formal, you know, it needs to be formal, and you need to use sort of sincerely and faithfully in the right context at the end of the, you know. So that's my paradigm. You know, who's to say that's right? And you know what a Gen Z person now thinks is a more appropriate way to communicate with another Gen Z person. So I think it's very much, we see it through our own sort of filters and lenses, don't we, that what's right and what's appropriate. And you know, I'm sure if we went back 100 years of how people were writing, you know, letters to each other back then, we would see it as like, well, that you could never write anything like that nowadays, because it would just be kind of almost comical. So yeah. So I guess there's like the old evolution piece that you've kind of alluded to at the beginning as well.
Yes. And, you know, to be honest, I think there's a place for all of these different types of communication, you know, in a corporate setting. One, you know, question is just, are you communicating for an internal audience or an external audience? Because you see a lot of brands out there who are speaking to Gen Z in Gen Z's language, and they should be doing that. Yeah. Because you know, that's their audience, those are their customers, their consumers. But I think, again, knowing the difference between how does our brand communicate externally, and then how do we internally communicate day to day with colleagues, for example, is an important distinction and something that requires, you know, some experience, some time, some training. But there's a place for all of that. It's just knowing when to use what form of communication.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just the final sort of big topic I want to kind of finish off before we just sort of talk about a few other things before we wrap up, Grace, is I guess the elephant in the room for many people, perhaps, or I don't know, it's the elephant in the room as far as I'm in my brain anyway, but it is obviously AI and how that's shaping, you know, so many parts of our professional life. And also, I guess, the impact that that's having on the you know, the art of writing, because, you know, we can delegate a lot of things to AI. And one of them is, you know, kind of write me an article, or write me a piece, or write me a blog post, or a LinkedIn post about a topic. And, you know, we've probably all seen the results of that. I'm just really interested in your professional perspective on, you know, how AI is influencing that. And like, in the same way we don't have to remember telephone numbers anymore, we just delegate that to our phones. Do you see a place in the future where our brains are completely, you know, kind of lost that art, that ability to write, and we kind of, we delegate it to machines? What are your thoughts on that, Grace?
Well, I guess, first of all, let me say I'm not anti-AI when it comes to writing. You know, I can't tell you the number of people who've said to me, well, aren't you worried ChatGPT is going to put you out of a job? No, I'm not worried about ChatGPT putting me out of a job, or at least not anytime soon.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you still need a human in the loop to use ChatGPT, right? Like, certainly you can use generative AI to write for you. You can use it to edit for you. You can, and it can do it so much faster than you can do it. But you still need to give it prompts, good prompts, right? And you, a human, are still responsible for quality control, right? Like, we all know by now there's so many kind of famous stories of this that you know, AI makes stuff up, right? Yeah. Like, it references things that don't have books, or, you know, or sources that don't actually exist. So I think that what AI is really doing in terms of writing is it's moving people into the editor role more than the role of writer. So we have to become really effective editors. And of course, prompt engineers. We all have to be good prompt engineers if we want ChatGPT or whatever to do a good job for us. But you know, there are some issues with what the actual writing looks like that AI generates. So I think people should use it. Everyone kind of knows this by now. It's not AI that's necessarily going to put most of us out of a job, but someone who knows how to use AI.
Yeah,
I forget who said that first, but And so I think people should play with it. They should try to use it. They should get good at writing, you know, prompts for it. But we also have to be on the lookout for the issues with AI-generated writing. It sounds really good on the surface. But if you look closer at a lot of AI-generated writing, there are a lot of issues with it that are the exact things that we've been trying to teach our clients not to do for a long time. Mm. You know, it tends to use more big words than a human writer might use. It sort of overuses transition words and phrases. It often uses too many adjectives. There's sort of a tendency towards generalizations with words like overall or for many people, you know, things like that, rather than giving specific examples. Now, this is all unless you specifically prompt it not to do those things, of course. Mm. So I think it's just what I've noticed is a lot of AI-generated writing, a human doesn't then go back and check and doesn't sort of edit for that human element. And so it ends up sounding very empty, a lot of jargon, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, I've gotten a little bit away from the actual question that you asked me. I mean, AI is certainly here to stay. It is definitely going to affect the way people write for probably the rest of time.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubting that, I think. So what we're trying to do is encourage people to go, okay, which parts of the writing process can I use AI for to help me write? To help me work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
But then which pieces do I still need to take accountability for as a person, as a human?
Yeah, I like what you said, actually. I mean, you didn't go off topic. I think the idea of you still need to be a good editor, and to be a good editor, you need to know how to write it in the first place, and you need to be able to spot those kind of things that don't work and the things that do. So I think that's a really good a good tip, that you can't completely abdicate all responsibility and say that it's, you know, AI's job now. So, you know, I think that's really important.
That's right. You still need to know what good looks like.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just wrapping up before we talk about a few things, where we're just going to talk about a few ways that people can reach out to you, Grace. Any final tips? So I'm kind of, you know, the kind of thing that people always go, you know, at the end of your workshops, I'm sure they get lots and lots of stuff, but, you know, one thing that really stuck with me, or one thing I'm going to take away and remember, you know, any of those kind of the you hear quite often that you're happy to share with our listeners as a kind of quick win, a quick tip that we can all try in our writing just to help us do a little bit more effective and a little bit more skillful in the way that we communicate.
Well, I'll give two. One is sort of a low-tech, old-school thing that maybe many folks maybe did this in school at some point, but read your writing out loud.
Mm.
You haven't done it in a long time or ever. Try it. Before you hit send on your next email or whatever, try reading it out loud slowly. You will catch things that you would not catch if you just read silently in your head. You proofread silently in your head. And so it's something that no matter how experienced or skilled my clients are, no matter the industry, this is a practice that serves people really, really well. And it's something you can do anywhere for $0.
Yeah.
and it can make a really big difference to your writing. So that is what I would, this is just a reminder to people to do that. You can do this anywhere. You can do it for nothing. The other thing is, since we were just talking about AI, I think that one of the reasons people tend to produce writing that's not very good is not because of a lack of skill, but because of a lack of curiosity and a lack of conviction that it matters. So what I would encourage people to do is to get curious about your own writing and about what it's saying about you. And specifically, a tip for how to do that is ask AI, ask ChatGPT to analyze a writing sample that you produced. right? Ask it to analyze your tone or your voice, for example. And it actually can give you some really interesting feedback, and it will help to build your own awareness around the writing that you're producing. And I think that greater awareness around your habits, around the way you're coming across, around your patterns is the first step to improving them.
Mm. I like that. I like both of those. In fact, actually, I'm going to build on your first tip. And this is, I don't know whether this is one you've used or would recommend, Grace. But what I do is, if I've written something, and again, you know, that on that principle of hearing it out loud, is I'll convert it into a PDF, and you'll get the PDF to read it out to me, which you can get it to, which is a bit synthesized, but. Again, you spot so many errors when you hear it's being read out. So it's a similar sort of thing, but it's more lazy version of doing it. And if you're trying to save your voice or you don't like the sound of your own voice. So yeah, definitely listening out loud. And actually that works in so many other areas as well. So before I start the podcast, before I introduce my even hook up on that we did before we started the recording, I'll read out your introduction out loud, because I know I'll spot a couple of things that I missed when I just typed it and sent it across to you. And so, yeah, really important tip, that really good one.
Yeah, good.
Excellent. Well, look, that's been really, really fantastic, Grace. Before we leave, I'm going to kind of just ask a few things that we can put into the show notes. So for those listeners listening on iTunes or another podcast platform, if you want to go head across to thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, head to this episode, Grace's episode. And if you go onto the actual episode, then click on that, you'll see extensive show notes. But at the bottom of those show notes, we're going to put some links. So we're going to put a link into your LinkedIn profile, Grace, if anyone wants to reach out to you directly. And we're also going to put a link into your website, Bold Type US. And finally, we've got a link to your workshops. Do you want to just tell us a little bit more about your, it's the writing editing for communicators. I think we've kind of alluded to that during the conversation. Do you want to just say a little bit more about how that works?
Yes, absolutely. So our kind of signature workshop, which we call very simply writing and editing, it's the workshop that we deliver live to teams all over the US and around the world. We, again, typically deliver that to teams, but what we've done is we've repurposed it as a self-paced, pre-recorded workshop that individuals can enroll in. So if you don't have a big corporate budget behind you to bring us into work with an entire team, or you work for a very small organization and you don't have 15 people who might want to take this workshop, we're offering it in this new format, and we hope that folks will find that to be a helpful option.
Brilliant. Oh, thank you. That's great. That's a really nice offer and very, very, very entrepreneurial. So I like that idea. So yeah, happy to share that. We'll put that link into the show notes at the bottom of the show notes. Well, look, Grace, that's been absolutely fantastic. Really illuminating. I've taken away a lot from that conversation, mainly reassurance that AI isn't going to make us all kind of just sort of chair bound and useless, that we will still have a purpose, particularly when it comes to writing. And those your final tips there, again, are really fantastic, but also everything else you shared with us was really illuminating. So thank you so much for your time on behalf of the listeners, Grace. Really appreciate that.
Thank you, Craig. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for having me.
You take care. Thank you, Grace. Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Engaging Internal Comms podcast. If you've got any ideas for episodes you'd like us to cover in future, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can use the feedback form at engagingic.com. If you're not already subscribed to the show via your podcast platform, please do so. And if you could leave a review for us, that would be absolutely fantastic. We have links to other episodes at engagingic.com. All of our previous episodes are available there. And if you're interested in our visual communication services, our big pictures, our learning maps, our explainer videos, and also our live graphic recording, please get in touch with us again at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk. Thank you.